As we come to the end of this sitting, I would like to offer a little guided meditation. And if you'd like to adjust your posture and make yourself more comfortable, you're welcome to do that. As you're sitting here quietly, become aware of your thinking. Be an observer of your thinking. So for this exercise, it's fine to think or not think as it occurs. But when thinking occurs, notice that you're thinking. If it helps you stay present for your thinking, you can ever so gently whisper in the mind, whisper the word thinking as you notice that you're thinking. And when you do notice your thinking, see if you can notice the quality of your thinking. Is your thinking very light, easy, floats through without any effort? Or is there a stickiness or a forcefulness propelling your thinking? Notice if there's any way in which your mind might be leaning into the thinking, or one thought leans into the next one, or any way in which your mind grasps onto the thinking. So continuing to notice your thinking as you think, allowing yourself to think. See if you can notice if you have any judgments about thinking. It could be judgments about what you're thinking now, or it could be judgments about thinking in general for yourself, of your thinking, the way you think. As you notice yourself thinking, can you notice if you might have some beliefs connected to thinking? Do you believe that your thinking will solve your problems? Do you believe that thinking is an obstacle? Do you believe your thoughts tell the truth? In some subtle layer of the mind, do you carry any beliefs connected to your thinking? And what do you notice about the tone of the inner voice that thinks? If you think in words, is it soft and gentle, harsh and loud? Is the tone of your inner thinking judgmental or accepting? Is it hesitant? Or confident, as if you're listening to some of the tone of someone else's voice, not so much what you're thinking, but the tone of it, the tone of the voice. What do you hear in the tone of your own inner voice? And then, in the same way that you might listen to a very faint sound far in the distance, you'd hold yourself very still. Maybe you would let your thinking kind of get quiet. Let yourself get really still and see if you can listen deep inside to some deep, deep, subtle layer. What are the thoughts you have at the subtlest, stillest layer of your mind? And then finally, as you observe your thinking, notice your thinking, whatever way your thinking occurs, let it be free. Notice if there's any spaces or gaps between your thoughts. And if you notice spaces and gaps between thoughts, see if you can stay there in that stillness, or that openness, or that spaciousness. Appreciate it, rest there, for however long it's there. Okay, so the theme for today is thinking. And a little bit it follows in some kind of way the theme of last Monday, which was more about kind of the mindfulness of the body talk. And one of the points I tried to make last week is that mindfulness of the body is fundamental to the whole endeavor of Buddhist practice. And the more we can be grounded in our body, the more the rest of the unfolding of mindfulness can happen smoothly. Another whole area of mindfulness, which is very important, is mindfulness of thoughts, of thinking. And thinking is also very important in everybody's lives. And in some ways, it's important for meditators because our thinking, in some way or other, often gets in our way of our ability to meditate. Mindfulness is not thoughtfulness. Some people confuse the two. So it's not thinking about your experience. And the mind will get all caught up in its thoughts and wander away. And you might spend long periods of time in meditation, not present because you're caught in your thoughts, wandering away in your thoughts. Or you might be present in some way with your experience, but your thinking is still churning away and actively engaged in your experience, judging it or resisting it or commentating on it or some kind of relationship to it. And I think thinking, the world of thinking, is a fascinating world. And it can open up, it can just keep opening and opening and opening to so many different aspects of our human life. And sometimes in giving meditation instructions, we seem to hear that the point in meditation is somehow just let go of our thoughts, let go, come back to the breath. Or if we do pay attention to the thinking, it's just enough just to kind of settle it so that we can have no thoughts or don't have thoughts kind of obstruct us. And there's some validity or value in that kind of instructions. But for someone who's going to be engaged in practice of mindfulness for a long period of time, not just for a few months, but maybe for years, sooner or later it's actually very helpful to spend some time, some quality time, looking at our world of thinking, at the whole phenomena, the whole range of what goes on in our thinking, from the content of our thoughts, what we think, to the emotional impact of our thinking, how thinking impacts us. We don't just have, I think of thoughts as being. Sometimes I teach that thoughts are kind of ephemeral. They have no weight. They have no substance. They have no, they're just kind of like the most ephemeral, empty thing in the universe in some kind of way. Insubstantial thing in the world. But thoughts are also very powerful. And it's fascinating to study the way that thinking kind of reaches out and affects so much of the rest of our lives. So it affects our emotions, for example. You can see, if you're very attentive, you can see the arising of some thought, some thinking, and you can see how that thought, even just one sentence thought, has an emotional impact on our body, on how we're feeling. You can feel it, the effect of thinking on our body, physically, not just emotionally, but also physically. As you probably have seen, if you have very stressful thoughts, you're kind of grabbed by your thoughts, you can feel tension in different parts of your body that's connected to that kind of thinking. Thoughts affect our motivations, what motivates us. Probably almost everything that we're motivated to do passes through a filter of thinking, or arises out of thinking, or is followed by thinking. There is so much to discover in the world of thinking, and to engage in that exploration of thinking is one of the very effective ways of each of us becoming our own teacher. So rather than kind of reading a book about Buddhism or a book about human psychology, is to actually do the work of investigating yourself. There's a great story of, there's a psychologist at UC Berkeley named, I think her name is Eleanor Rauch?
Rauch.
Rauch. And she wrote an article that I read many years ago where she writes in the article about, she studies Tibetan Buddhism, and she's a psychologist. And some visiting Tibetan monks were visiting her, and they asked her what she did. And she said, "Well, I study psychology." "And what's that?" "And that's study of the human mind. And that's what psychologists do." And so the monk asked, "Do psychologists meditate?" And she said, "Well, most of them don't." She was talking about researchers of psychology. And the monk said, "Is that ethical?" So anyway, and it's a wonderful exploration to study our minds, our own minds. Sometimes our thinking can feel toxic, the way we think. And sometimes the toxicity can feel very mild, and the toxicity can be deadly to some people. The way that the tendrils of thinking kind of reach out into our emotions and feelings and body experience. And on the other hand, thinking can be quite enlivening, quite awakening, enlightening, brings a lot of joy and lightness to us, certain kinds of thoughts, and feel the impact, the effect. Sometimes thoughts just flow through very lightly, and often with light thoughts, kind of the easy thoughts that seem to have almost no effort, that sometimes can be much more likely a place of creativity, and great intuition and creativity can arise in that kind of easy, effortless kind of place of thinking, very, very settled. When thinking is very labored and forced, really preoccupied and caught by something, chances are there's very little creativity going on. Often the mind feels very claustrophobic in that kind of situation. Some people's minds are very fragmented because of their thoughts. The thoughts have a life of their own. They're kind of pulling us around by the nose. We're kind of just caught in a swirl of them and thinking and caught. And they have this huge impact on our feelings and our emotions. But we are, we don't have any way of stopping it, seemingly. And then you do something like meditate for half an hour, an hour, or do some other thing that's maybe comparable, that somehow can settle the thinking, quiet the thinking mind, and somehow that also quiets and settles sometimes the emotional body, the feeling body. There are layers and layers of thinking that goes on. There's the coarse layer of thinking about, you know, what you're going to have for dinner, perhaps. And then there's deeper layers of thinking where you think of, where you tell yourself stories and stories, or you tell yourself beliefs, or you have attitudes, ideas about anything and everything. They can be extremely, you know, more and more subtle as you get into it. So, for example, there could be a belief about your thinking. So there's a kind of meta thought about thinking. Oh, my thinking is always true, or my thinking is me. Who I really am is my thoughts, and that's a belief. Every thought I have is true, including all those judgments I have, you know, judging everybody. Those are true. And it can be a very subtle kind of attitude of, I believe my thoughts. There can be subtle thoughts about what we hope thinking is going to do for us. Thinking is going to provide me a solution in life. It's going to protect me. There can be subtle beliefs around thinking that connected to who you are, that somehow beliefs are creating a sense of self. And or there has to be a certain kind of self, have to be a certain kind of person. To be a human being is to think certain things or react certain ways or be a certain way. And these deeper kind of beliefs, deeper thoughts about who we think a person should be, who I think you are, I am, kind of is one of the fuels, that affects how we think and what we think about. One of the advantages of meditation, when the meditation gets very still and quiet, the surface chatter of the mind quiets down. And the more surface chatter quiets down, the more you get quieter, you can get down to the deeper and deeper layers of your thinking, to layers of your thinking that's usually invisible to the kind of surface chatter. And you see layers of beliefs, layers of attitudes, layers of storytellings, things you're telling yourself, what's going on, that are almost inaccessible in the normal states of mind. because the mind is so still, that movement of it's, you know, it becomes the loudest thing. You know, it's like if you look at a surface of a lake and it's a lot of waves. There's all kinds of waves of different amplitudes, right, going across there. There's big ones and there's smaller ones and smaller ones, smaller ones. But you can hardly notice the smaller ones because you notice the big ones going. But if the wind dies down and the waves die down, finally what you're aware of, maybe finally before the lake becomes completely still, is you're aware of the smallest waves. Those are what's left, in a sense. And they weren't really visible and noticeable when the waves were so big. So in that kind of analogy, the same thing with the mind. When the mind gets more and more still, you see the subtlety. But subtlety doesn't mean that it's insignificant. Sometimes the subtle stuff, the quiet stuff that's deep down inside, is sometimes what influences and shapes our life the most. It kind of sets the tone, it sets the direction, it sets the priorities, it sets the values, it sets the, you know, all kinds of stuff. Some people are really troubled by their thoughts. Their thoughts, just to say that they're troubled by their thoughts is to say it sometimes even mildly. Some people are tortured by their thinking. And some people love their thoughts, completely delighted in their thoughts. They just kind of would love to spend, if they're going to spend company with anybody, it's with themselves, you know. And other people are desperate for other people to talk to, so they don't have to listen to themselves. There's so many different ways of relating to thinking. One of the tasks in mindfulness practice is to discover what your relationship to your thoughts is, and then decide whether this is a useful way of relating to your thoughts, accurate way of relating to your thoughts. And if it's not useful and accurate, then can you somehow shift and change your relationship to your thoughts so that you have one relationship which is more accurate and useful? So two nights ago, my 7-year-old son woke up at 2 o'clock at night or so with a cough. And I woke up listening to it and said, oh no, when he gets a cough, sometimes it's a sign that he's getting a cold and he gets croup. And if he gets cough and he gets this croupy cough too much, eventually he throws up because it's too much. And then he gets settled, then he doesn't cough for a while. But we didn't want to take it to that point. So he started coughing in the middle of the night. I woke up, oh no, it's starting again. So finally, I thought, okay, I'm going to try to help him a little bit. And sometimes we've had success in the past of giving him hot chai with honey in it as a way of kind of settling his throat or his cough or whatever. So I got up in the cold apartment, cold house, and was going to, you know, make this chai for him. And then I went up to the cupboard to get the honey. And the honey container was empty. So, now this is consequential, right? It was cold. You know, my son was coughing. It was going to be very unpleasant if we couldn't stop this cough. And I wanted to get back to bed as quickly as I could. You know, all kinds of things going on in my mind, right? All kinds of thoughts spinning around. And then the honey was empty. So of course, right? Of course. I thought the most obviously logical, sensible thing, right? Next, which was my wife. Why didn't she buy honey? How could she do this? And, you know, she should always have backups and this and that, and my wife. Now, it wasn't that bad, the thoughts, but it was, you know, they were kind of, they're much milder, more kinder than that, but still they were kind of in that genre. Not exactly kind, but a little bit in that. So, but I was paying attention. I could feel the way that felt yucky for me to have those thoughts. It was kind of toxic to have those kinds of thoughts. So then I opened up another cupboard. and there was a brand new bottle of honey. Yeah, my wife. So the one of the questions is, do we take responsibility for our thoughts and how we think? And so then I finally made the bed. At that time, we had a whole history of taking care of him, story I can tell you. But finally, it was cold, you know, it was a couple of nights ago, it was 33 degrees. I don't know how it was, pretty cold here in Redwood City. And we didn't have any heat on the house, and it was cold. And I finally got into bed and I was freezing. And boy, was I awake. You know, I've been practicing for 30 years in a tradition to be awake. And there I was. 2:30 at night, awake. And so then I had those kind of, I'm awake in the middle of the night thoughts that some people have. And the first thoughts were kind of yucky. The first were kind of yucky. It was like, oh no, I'm awake. I should be asleep. If I don't get to sleep soon, I won't get enough sleep tonight. I have to get up early, and then I'll be tired tomorrow, which will be a drag. And then I'll have this interview with people, and I'll be kind of grumpy because I'm tired, and I'm supposed to be kind of, you know, not grumpy in my profession, you know, it's not okay. And this is not going to be good, you know. And so I had those thoughts. And so then, you know, pretty soon, you know, pretty quickly, I said, this is not so useful line of thinking. So I said, okay. So a few other things I reflected on. One was, actually, at the moment, this moment right now, it's actually pretty wonderful. It's actually kind of nice. I'm finally warm. I'm laying here. I feel very good in my body. I feel good in my mind. I'm awake. There's nothing actually wrong at all, except for my projection about what it means for tomorrow. The present moment is just fine. And so why don't I sit here, lay here and enjoy it? So then it occurred to me, well, these first thoughts I had were kind of yucky, kind of a little toxic, mildly toxic, yucky. Why don't I just kind of swing the pendulum in the other direction and think about what's going on right now in a way that brings pleasure and delight? So I started thinking basically about my blessings, about being in a house, having a roof over my head, covers over me, being warm in bed, you know, all kinds of stuff. You know, a wife who buys honey. And so I could feel that actually had a very different effect on my system, my body, my mind, to have those kinds of thoughts. But then the really interesting thing I thought happened was that after a little while, I noticed that even to think positive thoughts like that, even though they feel good for me, was also tiring to do that. And it's a little bit strain on the mind. And you can see that if you go get very still in meditation. You can see that even glorious thoughts, wonderful thoughts, can have a little strain on the mind to be engaged in it. And so okay, enough of this thinking. I think I'll just lay here and, you know, just be present, not think particularly, just be. Certainly was much more restful. Just be here and be awake, since I was awake. And the next thing I knew, I woke up 2 hours later. So I don't know how to the point or useful it was to tell my story of that night, but the idea is to start studying our thinking and the effect that our thinking has on us, and to start also noticing what we're telling ourselves. Many times what we tell ourselves goes unexamined, unquestioned. Sometimes the authority behind our beliefs and what we tell ourselves is unexamined. But what authority do you have it that you are a lousy person, to use a generic word, expression, or a great person. Many people have, it's been said, many people here in the West have low self-esteem or a lot of self-criticism that goes on. There's some authority behind that belief, those ideas. But what authority? Do you question it? What are you telling yourself? Can you somehow look and engage in a different way? How do you relate to thoughts? Do you think thoughts are true automatically and therefore you have to take them in, absorb what they're saying as if they're really true? Can you see thoughts as a working hypothesis? Can you see them as fiction sometimes? Can you see them as interpretation? Can you see them as something that's can be dropped and directed in other directions when it's not useful? And from the point of view of Buddhist practice, one of the very important aspects of this investigation of thinking is to learn to have enough sense of our thinking, enough ability to see it, be present for it, see what's going on, so that any tendency to grasp connecting to thinking, any clinging connected to thinking, we can learn to let go of. And so we can be present for thoughts, we can think even, but there's no tendency to grasp, to hold. And when there's no tendency to grasp and to hold on to thinking, then when you sit down to meditate, there isn't going to be this big nemesis that's going to kind of pull you away all the time, because the power to pull you away is not there. You might still think, but it's not going to be compelling you into thought. And that's a great thing, not to be compelled in the world of your thinking, to be uncompelled around your thoughts. So, I didn't mean to talk so long, because what I'd like to do, if it's okay with some of you, is for some of you to say a few words about what that guided meditation was like. What did you notice? What did you discover? Use the mic, please. And also, it would be very much appreciated if you don't mind, when you can use the mic and speak, if you could say your name.
Hi, I'm Carolina. It dawned on me that my thinking is coming from my whole body.
Great. Thank you. All the time? All thoughts?
No, I don't know. But yeah, I guess.
All your thoughts?
I don't know.
You might look at the thoughts at different times of day and different kind of situations, different quality of thoughts, different kind of thinking, and see if you have the same experience of coming from your whole body. Maybe sometimes they are. I mean, sitting here meditating, maybe then it comes. But if you're really afraid, where do they come from? Are you really angry? Where do they come from?
Hi, my name is Pega, and for me, it broke the chain of the thoughts.
It broke the chain of the thoughts? To be looking at them? Just to look at them broke
just
it?
Just that meditate, yes.
Yeah, great.
And I tuned into that, and then I know that's the purpose of meditation, but at that point I was caught.
To break the thing.
Yeah, and
was it excuse me, but was that nice for you? Was it satisfying, or you?
Yeah, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. For however long it lasted, but knowing that it could be there, and it was familiar, but it's just that. It's sometimes hard to get into that space. So just
yeah.
And I don't know, I guess I just realized, I mean, I've thought about that before too, but there's also, I think that emotional part of things also can go hand to hand with the thoughts and kind of co-create or, you know.
Yes,
so
yes.
Those thoughts also came in.
One of the fascinating things around paying attention during our life is to see the causal relationship between our body, emotions, and thinking, and emotions and intentions. So sometimes you'll see, for example, that you have a thought and that impacts how you emotionally feel. Other times, some emotion arises and that impacts how you think. So the causal relationship can go in both directions. In the back there?
My name is Penelope. I had a question, and that was, what is the difference between thinking and observing? And I noticed that if I was trying to observe my body or my breathing or whatever, then I would start to, once I observe something, then I would react to it, and then I would correct it, or I would have a thought about it, and it seemed tricky to separate observing from thinking. So what do you think about that?
I believe that there's not a sharp line between thinking and observing, with some idea that there can be observation without any kind of thought at all. Sometimes people posit like pure perception. It is a pure perception with any kind of thought. I think that the thought, there can be thinking that's part of observation. However, to say that, it's kind of true in the subtlety of the mind. In the coarser level of the mind, there's really two separate things. Thinking and observing is as different as watching something in the world versus listening to a commentator comment about it. So, you have a news person who's commentating about, some event that's happening, or a sportscaster, commenting about the game. But you're watching the game. And there's two different things. And you can watch the game without necessarily listening to the commentary. So mindfulness practice, the kind of observation we do in mindfulness practice, is silent awareness. It's closer to a kind of a silent awareness than it is to a thinking awareness. But as I said, the line is not completely sharp, so that when your mind gets really, really quiet and still, you'll see that maybe the line isn't so absolute. Is this helpful at all? Or is it too complicated?
I don't know. I guess, it's still difficult for me to see what I understood about meditation is that you're supposed to be observing. When you observe something, you have a reaction, which is a thought, I guess.
Maybe
it isn't a thought necessarily. It might be an emotion, but then, okay, so you have an emotion, and then you have a thought about the emotion. It seems very hard to, I guess, it's still kind of unclear to me, what is thinking as compared to where your mind is meant to be in meditation.
The idea in mindfulness meditation is to keep the observation, the awareness, very simple. Just the facts, just what's going on. And often the mind, when it starts thinking, is doing more than just seeing it for what it is. It's making a judgment, evaluation about what's going on there, as a reaction to it. So one of the things we try to do in mindfulness is then to notice, to be aware of the response, the reactions that occur. Not to push them away, but just to see clearly that. And it's kind of like learning to be the observer, the quiet, silent observer, sees everything without being caught in the midst of it, without being entangled with it. So so an analogy is used for the world of thinking is that of, you're standing at the edge of the train tracks watching the trains go by. And you know the trains are there, you watch them go by. But every once in a while, some really interesting train comes along where the doors are open, you jump on, and you wake up in Seattle. But the idea is not to get involved, just to watch, not necessarily think about it. Not make commentary about it, not to judge it, not to get involved in that kind of way. But of course you will. And then the task is to realize that's not mindfulness. Mindfulness is the seeing, this is what I'm doing. I'm judging right now. I'm commenting. So I like to think of mindfulness as being a silent awareness. That's not quite right either. But it's closer to that than the usual kind of thinking we have. So is this helpful at all? Are we missing it?
Yes, it is. I think it's still a difficult topic for me, but those are some helpful analogies.
Yes, Marilyn.
I find that I rely on thoughts to kind of
keep track of the passage of time and to find a continuity in my existence. And so when I stop thinking, it's all of a sudden it's like, hold on, I'm not here. Wait, I need to come back. And so it's kind of like, you know, it does tie into the whole fear of letting go. And, you know, I've even asked, you know, monks and stuff, like, well, how did you, you know, break on through? But I'm not quite sure how to, you know, to really keep track of where you are and keep you oriented in your existence without the kind of, you know, the marker points that your thoughts give you. Uh-huh. and the translation that you're bought. And uh-huh. Just to throw your analogy back at you, it's like if you turn on a football game or a baseball game, you'd have no idea what's going on if you didn't have the commentator. You know?
Well, sometimes it takes a long time before they get around telling you what the score is. I like the story of the monk who was climbing the mountain to enlightenment. And coming down the mountain was Manjushri, the great bodhisattva, the great embodiment of wisdom. He came down as an old man carrying a sack. And the monk asked Manjushri, how do you get enlightened? And Manjushri had his big bag he was carrying, just dropped it. Just let go. So the monk understood, oh, just let go, your baggage. And then the monk said, oh, good. After that, what do you do then? And Manjushri went, and picked up the bag and continued walking down the mountain. So you're not expected to give up thinking once and for all. I think thinking is a very important part of life, and planning and thinking and orienting yourself in the world is a normal thing to do to some degree. But it's very helpful to have the freedom and the sense of trust and the ease to, at various points when it's appropriate to do so, to be able to drop the baggage, to put them down. So it might be easier to let drop the thinking, to let it stop, or let all that kind of activity stop, if you know that it's just temporary. You're just doing it. You do it for half an hour, or 5 minutes, or a minute, or 10 seconds, and then when it's appropriate, you can bring back the other things. But to be constantly thinking, you know, about who am I and where am I going, what am I supposed to do, it's just a constant. It's just tiring for the mind. You'll get exhausted. So to be able to have that capacity to give the mind a vacation. And if you have that ability to let go temporarily, then I think it becomes easier to start, when you do have to think in more helpful ways. But if it, so I don't know if that helps you. Thank you. Yes, please.
My name is Linda. I found it kind of interesting. I was telling myself pleasant little stories, and while you were doing the guided meditation, it was very interesting, but I started dozing off and just kind of falling asleep, and I switched straight into dreaming, which I only knew was dreaming because it was a little weirder than the normal pleasant stories that, you know, you're here but you're not here. And then I would, I'm dreaming, I need to wake up now, and then go back to the other story. The seamlessness back and forth was kind of amusing because it was all just the same types of thoughts, but when I was asleep and when I was awake. And I found that kind of fun to watch. Uh-huh. That go back and forth. And it kind of illustrated to me that that they are somewhat ephemeral.
Yes.
In a lot of cases.
Great, thank you.
Hi, my name's Frank. I found the practice very useful, actually, and I think I tend to enjoy my thoughts. And the practice helped to reveal the degree to which thinking colors so much of every experience. And so to lessen that is a good thing, I think. But how would you do, and this is similar to the the other question that was asked, how do you differentiate between when you're in the experience of meditation and you find yourself in a sort of experiential imagery? And is this, again, hard to differentiate from thinking?
What do you mean by experiential imagery?
It's difficult to describe, I guess. But you feel that you're observing an image or a scene taking place, and yet you're part of it.
Participatory imagery?
Yeah, that's it.
So the question is, again, the difference?
Is that thinking, and is that something that is... I guess for me there's always a slight conflict or a tension when I'm meditating between this is what I should be doing, this is what I shouldn't be doing. And would that be classified as thinking or...?
Yeah, I think some people tend to think more in words. Some people tend to think more in images. Some people are very image-focused in their thinking. So that's the way that some people kind of go back and forth. They're ambidextrous with that. Do both. And I think most people do a little bit of both. And sometimes it can be quite strong. Sometimes if the mind is very calm and relaxed, there can be dream images that arise. And even people that think verbally a lot can do a lot of dream imagery arising. And in my experience, when the dream imagery is quite strong, when I'm dreaming, kind of in dream state in meditation, that's when I tend to participate in the dreams much more. I get caught in it.
Is that getting caught in it?
Yeah.
Because you talk about a passing train and not to catch, not to let yourself become attached to these things. So is that become? At what point does it become attachment? And at what point is that your experience?
Yeah. If you can let go of it easily, then you're not attached. If you can't let go so easily, then you're somehow caught by it.
Should you let go? Do you want to let go?
It depends on what you want to do.
Yeah. So you make is a choice.
It is a choice. Yeah.
And if you're making a choice, then it's therefore sort of conscious.
Yeah, this is a conscious practice. And so there is a conscious choice that's made in mindfulness practice. And so classically, the function of this practice that we do here is to liberate the mind. And to liberate the mind is to liberate it from its clinging. So if that's the purpose of the meditation, then if you're caught, if you're clinging, then you're trying to find the place where we let go of clinging. So that's a should. That's a kind of, and there can be a tension then between the mind's tendency to cling and the mind's possibility of letting go of clinging. To bring it back more immediately to mindfulness, there can be a tension between where the center of gravity is for our mind, for our attention. Where's home base? Where are we? So is center of gravity in our thinking, or is the center of gravity in the knowing that knows that we're thinking? So there's a kind of self-conscious awareness, not self-consciousness in the terms of being kind of caught up in oneself, but there's a kind of reflective awareness. When mindfulness is very strong, there's a kind of reflective awareness that you actually know that you're mindful while you're mindful. And so that when you know you're mindful when you're mindful, then you're residing in the mindfulness in a sense. When the mind leaves the mindfulness and gets caught up in the thoughts, then the center of gravity has become your thinking. And we're not asking you to stop your thinking. We're asking you to shift the center of gravity or shift the place of perspective. So the place where you look from is the place of awareness, not with your center of gravity of your or the center of your life being inside your thoughts. Does that make sense what I'm saying? So last one here in the back.
Well, I thought it was interesting that you were talking about...
Say your name, name, please.
Linda. The dream state, because that's how I felt. I was thinking about different solutions to a situation, and I felt that I was in a sort of dream state considering alternatives that I wouldn't normally consider in my regular life. So it felt as if it was a dream state. with alternatives sort of being presented to me that might be of a dream state. They might be unusual or alternative in some way and unique. And I found that very useful and different. And I just wanted to offer that as a comment.
That
I found that very helpful and strange, but uh-huh. sort of fun and but more useful.
Yes.
How about noting?
What?
Noting or labeling?
Noting. What about it?
When you are thinking, just say thinking. That kind of pulls you out of thinking and puts you in mood of observation.
That was the last thing.
If you are thinking.
Yeah.
Then you start noting.
Yes.
That I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Remembering. You break it down. Planning.
Right.
So if you do all that, then probably it will help you to stop thinking.
Yes. Yeah.
Just a comment.
Great. So, I hope it's been interesting or useful, because I think most of you think. So it's good to get to know what you do all the time. Sometimes it's like they say, you know, the fish doesn't see the water it swims in. So sometimes we don't see the element that we're always swimming in, which is the element of our thinking. So it's good to step back and take a real good look at it. So thank you.